I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
It's getting toward the end of October. Scary people will soon be knocking at your door. And then there are the trick-or-treaters. Ah, yes, the political campaigns have launched their ground games. Volunteers trying to visit as many homes as possible, maybe even yours. But with polls showing a neck-and-neck race for governor, what else will it take to win? Hello there, I'm Dennis O'Hare. Pull up a chair for another political breakfast. Our regulars, Brian Robinson and Theron Johnson, both got to-go orders this time. So we welcome former Atlanta City Council President Kathy Woolard and former state senator and former state Republican chairman Chuck Clay, now with the law firm of Hall Booth Smith. Good to have you both.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure.
And we should mention the next political breakfast will be an evening pop-up diner edition with a live audience, and we hope you will be there. Theron, Brian, and I will be at Emory University the evening of November 1st with all the last-minute information and analysis before Election Day. To find out more and to get your free tickets, go to wabe.org/community. All right, we've got a new poll from Reuters in the governor's race, and it pretty much tracks the others that we've seen showing a neck-and-neck race. But we have seen this before with Republicans on Election Day pulling out fairly comfortable victories. Chuck Clay, is there any unease this time that all these polls might have it right now?
Well, yes, of course, there's unease. Anybody who's ever run a race knows that. But truly, it is a different game plan of sorts. Ms. Abrams, and I think it's wise, it's risky, has run a campaign based on bringing new voters to the polls as Democrats. She hadn't been spending a lot of effort to convert me or anybody else that's perceived to be moderate, probably already knows how they're going to vote. And it's brought her daggone close. But I do think there are some inherent advantages right now to both Republicans and incumbents that gives him, in my mind, a two and a half, three-point advantage. A
couple of quick advantages that you think he's got.
One is just it's the known entity. And Republicans over the last, obviously, decade and a half have dominated statewide politics. That is changing. I'd be the first to admit it. And will there be some contestants? So I think one, incumbency. Two, I think they have the apparatus in place around the state that has been tried and true going back two decades now that has ultimately won, you know, resounding victories. And then third, I mean, I could talk about message, but it's that GOTV. That's what it's all about
get
now.
Get out the vote. G-O-T-V.
And these people are people that generally have voted. You just got to get it back out to go once more.
Well, I think this is, you know, well within the margin of error. Every time you see a poll, it one flips to the other, that, you know, by a point. So I think it's sort of a dead heat, if you will. But I think Stacey's going to take it. I've said, gosh, since the spring, I wouldn't bet for a man against a woman in this election under any circumstances. The odds are just not good enough. Stacey's run a heck of a game. She hasn't made any mistakes, really. And I think when the debates come and people get to listen to the differences between the two of them and the knowledge on the issues, she's just going to take it.
Kathy Woolard, perhaps the biggest number in this poll is 2%. That 2% is what Ted Metz, the Libertarian candidate, is polling. And if he holds on to that, and it is razor thin between the other two, then we've got a runoff. What do you think the chances of that are?
Oh, good Lord. I'm a runoff specialist.
Yeah.
And I
let her go first.
I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Lost a few there, huh?
Yeah, I'm pretty much broken. I've broken even there. But I think that, you know, it could definitely happen with this kind of margin. But I'm feeling very optimistic by the turnout that we're seeing early.
You know, it's happened before. Obviously, we all remember Paul Coverdale, White Fowler mm-hmm. race, which was won in runoff.
And Weiss Fowler finished first in the general
lost in the runoff, which is not unusual, as Kathy certainly knows. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I mean, this is still a pretty conservative. We haven't really gotten into issues. We've talked more about game plan. But I do think that is an inherent advantage. And I'm past the point. Nobody thinks Brian Kemp is Snidely Whiplash return. Nobody thinks, I don't, Stacey Abrams is somehow a scofflaw or soft on some of these horrific child crimes. I don't believe that. It's now about two people who've run pretty good campaigns at this point. Who gets them to the polls? I think the conservative has an advantage in Georgia.
The attack ads from the candidates and their allies go after Stacey Abrams on child sex trafficking legislation, for instance, or Brian Kemp on that unpaid loan for which he was a guarantor. But the Reuters poll showed that voters care most about, big surprise, health care and the economy. So what's the point of the ads if they're not talking about what the voters really care about?
Well, campaigns have traditionally believed that if you can find particular issues that show in polls, convince voters that the other person is, you know, a lesser candidate, that they go with that. I think voters turn those ads off for the most part. I think we're, you know, the issue of health care in particular, you know, Stacey's got it going on. She knows what needs to happen. You know, when she talks about that, it resonates with voters, you know, all over the map in Georgia. And I think that, you know, folks want to hear facts, and it really, that's where you get attention from voters.
Look, to me, these types of ads have been around forever. In many cases, a lot of the ideas, maybe you can get your opponent thrown off balance a little bit, and if he or she has to start responding, then they're off their game plan. Personally, I find it refreshing that people care about health care. So we can debate. She's for universal health care. Mr. Kemp is not in terms of affordability and providing of services. Those type of things are important, certainly health care being a big one. But there's other issues, too, from the taxes to immigration to illegal immigration, and a variety of things that people do care about. All the rest is kind of chaff at this point. And I think the real focus is hopefully exactly where you said it would be. And I know both candidates, I think, are really trying to focus on that from their views of what they think is important.
And just as early voting was beginning, came word that Blue Cross Blue Shield could be out of a bunch of counties that now have just Blue Cross Blue Shield in them for their health care under the Affordable Care Act. Does this work? And Kathy Woolard, I'll start with you. Does this work to the advantage of either candidate, or does it simply say you guys got to come up with something?
I think it works to the advantage of Abrams. If you are a woman in South Georgia, south of Macon, there's one neonatologist. If you have a problem pregnancy, your chances of dying in childbirth or post-childbirth are among the highest rates in the country. That's on people's minds every single day. And I think that, this issue really accrues to Abrams' benefit. She understands health care. She understands what we need to do, and she's willing to do it.
Look, it's a real problem. I've spent a lot of years dealing with it, both legislatively and a client. And we could spend hours talking about how to build a network. I think it's not a question of is there a need. There is a crying need up and down the entire framework of medical services, mental health services, abuse services. You could go on and on and on. The question is, how do you do it in a way that's cost effective, that provides the greatest opportunity to grow health care, attract health care professionals? There's money involved. But saying that we're going to have basically universal Medicaid, there's not enough money in the state budget. I mean, it sounds great and it will be appealing. That's simply not doable. You've got to create the incentives, the tax structure, And the incentives to young professionals coming into this business to distribute, we've got to get into more into the use of technology, of telemedicine, all the things that it's a big, big problem. And the solution will never be as simple as let's make universal Medicaid.
But Chuck Clay, meanwhile, U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has been saying we might, after the midterms, assuming the Republicans maintain their majority in the Senate, come back and look again at the idea of getting rid of Obamacare. Whatever one thinks of it, is that uncertainty the thing that the national Republicans ought to be throwing into local congressional races at this point?
You know, that cuts both ways. That's I guess if I was a good politician, I'd say, I wouldn't go dancing in those pair of slippers right now. But it is a critical, it's a huge issue. The Affordable Care Act, at this point, look, it's helped people. Has it been the way it's supposed to, in my view? No. Was it headed for a crash in terms of finances? Yes. But we do need to provide a network, and whether repealing Obamacare isn't going to convince voters. Unless you really have a hard, good plan, stay away, because that's not the way to win.
Well, I think as a political maneuver, maybe there will be some conservatives that get motivated by, you know, the word Obama associated with anything. But I think when all is said and done, if I were a Republican candidate in this state or any state and somebody threw that hot potato in my lap, I would not be pleased. We have lost billions of dollars in reimbursements for Medicaid that other states have taken advantage of. We've lost hospitals up and down this state. I would not want to be associated whatsoever with that conversation if I were a Republican candidate.
But even what we had didn't solve the problem, and that is the problem. It's a lot more complicated and complex, and we have to do it realistically with money. Last time I checked, Georgia doesn't print money, at least not legally, and we've got a way to make it work within the confines of our budget and revenue.
Meanwhile, early voting has been out the door and around the corner in a lot of places. Can we read anything into that, though? Everybody loves to see, does early voting favor one candidate or another, particularly in the governor's race? Can we read anything into it? Kathy, we'll start with you.
Well, I think you have to break it down and start looking into the districts and, you know, doing a lot more analysis than, you know, I stood in line at my, you know, my voting place. I think what's interesting is that I think we've got three times the number of voters have voted in the first couple of days than we've seen before. I don't think that's going to taper off. I think it's a little too soon to tell.
Is it new voters showing up for the first time, or is it the same voters that we've always seen just utilizing the convenience of early voting and, you know, it'll be the same numbers of people that we've always had?
Well, I think it's, you know, we're 3 days in. I don't think you can tell. But, you know, I voted the Ponce Library. I was among friends. Let's just say that. So, but I don't think I want to draw any statewide conclusions on that.
I voted in Cobb County Elections Office. I was amongst friends. No, I think it's a combination of both. I think new people, I think it's a good thing. I hope it's a good thing and not just repeaters like me or Ms. Willard. I mean, both sides have made tremendous strides and efforts, and quite candidly, campaigns get more sophisticated every year on targeting and turnout. But the reality is, no, sure enough, it was I didn't wait for it. I had to leave. 3 hours they sent to Marietta paper this morning to vote yesterday in Cobb County. That's longer than I ever stayed on election day in a line.
But neither of you says, okay, this wave of early voting favors Democrats or Republicans at this point?
Let's talk next week.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll all be geniuses.
I think right now it's difficult to tell. I think it favors Democrats, but I'm sure Chuck could make similar arguments.
Yeah, I would say this. Go back to what I said from the very beginning. It's now about the ground game, and we'll know next week who's done right now does it most effectively.
You both have run lots of campaigns, and I have chased certainly Kathy Woolard around in some of her campaigns, watching her do the ground game. Chuck Clay, I've talked to you in the middle of a ground game when you were running for Congress. So what advice would you give, particularly the two gubernatorial campaigns, on the ground game now? And does either have an advantage when it comes to that?
Well, if you haven't done the work leading up to this point, there is no amount of advice I can give you that'll help you get to the end, because this is when it all comes to fruition, right? The money's in the bank. I mean, candidates will be like, are you kidding? We still need more. But you know, you've raised the money, you've identified voters. Now you're just trying to get them out to the polls. And in some ways, the hard work is done. What I would say to any candidate is, at this point, don't lose focus. Don't give up. Don't lose focus. You know, keep going to the very, very end as hard as you can, because you might pick a few votes. But if you didn't do your work in July, you're going to miss some people.
I'm sure I've been waiting for Brian Kemp to call me. I'm sure he will after this show. I'm sure
for
he
your
did,
sage advice?
My sage advice. I'm not holding my breath. But I do think Kathy's right in the sense that it is discipline, discipline, discipline. Yeah, you need money up to the last minute. But I think both of these folks are very good with people. They're good retail politicians. And so you got to put on a smile and act like that three-person fish fry, and I won't name a place, to the 500 fish fry. We're both equally as important, equally as enjoyable, and there's nothing you'd rather be doing. And I'll, as soon as the election's over, I'll keep going to fish fries and barbecues just because I like them so much.
And each one has the best fish and the best barbecue in the state.
Ever.
Oh, ever. Okay.
Ever.
Anywhere. Let's look then at the strategy in the last couple of days. With a razor-close race and with candidates energizing the committed members of their parties, if it's this close, the difference could be in the middle, which everybody has said maybe doesn't exist anymore, but there is a thin sliver in the middle. The needle these folks have to thread, particularly in that governor's race, is do you make a pivot toward the middle now and risk disappointing and perhaps disincentivizing some of your committed supporters in order to get that middle that might make the difference and keep you out of a runoff?
You might see some ads, whatever that middle sort of means. Obviously, that is going to be and generally is a critical block, no matter how you define that. Mm. But I think most importantly, you go back, you got to play to your strengths. My view on these things, trying to convert the weak need or the wishy-washy at this point, that's another way to define the middle. They're not really, but depending on perspective. Mm-hmm. But I do think you've got to turn out your base. I think you'll see some ads, maybe a little softer edge to push to that voter, mm-hmm. environmental, health care, family safety, children, mm-hmm. education.
We've seen that a little bit from Kemp when he has brought his wife, for instance, into the ads.
Well, that's I think the advantage here still goes to Abrams. I think she doesn't have to do that. I think Abrams has made the bet on new registrants, voter intensity, that kind of thing, and she's running a really good game there. I think for Kemp, because he had to run as so extreme to the right in the primary, he's really had to try to figure out where does he stand on the religious exemption bills. The business community skewering him over it, and he doesn't know where to be. Where is he on health care? He knows it's a losing issue, and the traditional stance of Republicans in this state doesn't serve him well. So he's got some dancing around to do, and I don't think that helps him.
Quickly, his performance as Secretary of State has, of course, become not only the issue, not only the subject of campaign ads, it's become the center of legal fights over whether Georgia is keeping votes safe from fraud or suppressing votes, depending on your point of view. Glitches at Department of Driver Services sign-up sites, for instance, rejection of some ballots in Gwinnett County, and, of course, those 53,000 voters whose registrations are pending. In the end, is this really what's going to motivate voters on either side, or are we back to healthcare and the economy? Chuck Clay, I'll start with you.
Well, they do play. They play amongst certain groups.
Because we're talking about a specific candidate and his performance.
Yeah, and on his, do I think that that's ultimately going to be a deciding issue? No, I don't. One, I think most businesses and corporations think he's done a pretty good job as Secretary of State. But more importantly, remember, Secretary of State does not pass laws, and I know you know that here, but a lot of folks don't. They have to implement the laws that are passed federally
and
state.
He can certainly urge the legislature to pass some laws.
And certainly has done so with some success. Likewise with his budget. He can only do what he's budgeted with to implement reforms. But most important thing on this issue, and it's not being talked about, is nobody is going to be turned away from the polls. Nobody. if you have to vote, if it's provisional, you provide the information at a later time. Most folks believe that we do have to ensure security from hackers, just usual, you know, mischief, those types of things. It's a balance, but I think it's been met so far.
I think he's been a horrible Secretary of State. Not just this recent spate of issues around voter registration and being able to vote, but the identity breaches that we had a couple years back were just unprecedented. And he took a long time to take any ownership whatsoever of that. I think if you looked at his performance and compared it to any Republican or Democratic Secretary of State in the past, he would not measure up.
And there is much more to come in this edition of The Political Breakfast. Stay right here.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at GeorgiaHealthInitiative.org.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's take a look at some of the races other than governor that you think are really worth watching, maybe because it might tell us which direction the state is going in terms of party, or maybe just because it tells you the future of the office that's at stake here.
Well, I'll jump in. Listen, I think Carolyn Bordeaux is going to beat Rob Woodall in the 7th Congressional District. She has
Carolyn Bordeaux is the Democrat, Rob Woodall the incumbent Republican.
He's the incumbent. She has raised 3 times the amount of money he has. She's working hard. She's smart. She knows the issues. And I think she's going to win. But even as interesting as that is, that district overlays some of the most competitive districts in the state. So you really see this and the District 6,
McBath and Karen Handel.
Those are in there. But I think Fran Miller in Senate District 40 in North DeKalb is going to lose to former state rep Sally Harrell. She's competitive. They're cash on hand.
Well, they're both experienced folks.
They're both experienced, but Clinton won that district by 57%. So it's already, even back then, was a trending Democratic district. So I think Miller is going to be out. And I think that's a fun one. And then my favorite one is Mary Frances Williams against Sam Teasley. Sam Teasley's the Republican incumbent. Mary Frances Williams is a longtime healthcare lobbyist, children's advocate.
Yeah, she's been at the Capitol for years, just not sitting on the legislative side.
Right.
She's been out in the hallway lobbying.
Yeah, but what's interesting about this race is her dad was mayor of Marietta. He was a state rep in Marietta. Her family's well known. She's getting support from people behind the scenes that, you know, you might not think. And Sam was the House member who was the prime supporter of the religious exemption bills. David Schaefer was the Senate pro tem. He lost his election. He was one of the supporters. And Josh McCoon lost horribly in the primary. So this is, you know, this is going to be a kind of a weight around Teasley. And I think he's going to lose.
And David Schaefer was running for lieutenant governor in the Republican primary. Josh McCoon was running for secretary of state in the GOP primary.
Right.
And as you mentioned, both lost.
Both lost.
Well, I have to, since it's brought up, I have to give a plug from a friend, Sam Teasley, a shout out. He'll do fine. He's a great retail politician. You do have a clear difference of politics, and that's good. Voters will have a real choice to make in that race. That he has won it when it was actually leaning Democrat. It's a little more Republican now, but it's competitive. But I think Sam, in the end, will do. Representative Teasley will win that. The bellwether race for politics in this state and getting no coverage is Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you got a former congressman, John Barrow, one of the long distinguished names in Georgia politics and judicial roles going back years, and a sort of up and comer young
Brad Raffensperger.
that, you know, has the weight of what's considered to be the majority party right now, Republicans in Georgia, in terms of offices. So it'll be a very interesting matchup there. That will give you, I think, if you want to look at what the bottom, so bellwether demographics of the state of Georgia, watch that race. Lieutenant governor to me is fascinating because the first time in certainly my lifetime and probably heck of a lot longer than I've been around, but you're going to have a lieutenant governor, either whoever wins, who has never set foot in terms of any legislative or elected position in the state Senate.
And that question came up during the debates from the Atlanta Press Club and certainly others, where, you, as you mentioned, neither one has presided over, even been part of the Senate over which he or she will preside.
He or she has no idea. Now, I'm not about to comment on the internal politics of Atlanta City Council, but I can tell you in the state Senate, there's a lot of unsettled turf. Mm-hmm. That is going to have to be examined, but it will again sort of be bellwether and demographics, both relatively unknown, advantage Republican for all the things we said.
I think for governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, Democrats are going to take it.
Let's move to just a few other things. One of the stories that tended to get hidden in all of this was the Pauling County Airport. Now, Governor Deal landed at the Pauling County Airport, which has been the site of debate over whether it would go from a general aviation, small airplanes airport to the second big commercial airport for Atlanta. There's been debate and push about that for years. The governor announced, let's put an aviation academy there, train mechanics and other support people. Well, if you do that, you certainly don't put a giant commercial aviation airport there. That seemed to kill the momentum for a second big airport in Paulding County. But is that the end of it? Chuck Clay, I'll start with you.
As I said earlier, that airport and the issue around it has been the bottomless quarry of both political careers, but also conjecture. We all know the background of both the role Delta plays, the role the city of Atlanta
Delta
plays.
Delta opposed very strongly the idea of another big airport in Paulding County or anywhere else for that matter.
But early on, years ago, there was an idea we desperately need Dobbins possibly, mm-hmm. Paulding County. You know, you've got PDK, obviously, and Charlie mm-hmm. Brown and McCollum now, but they don't serve that function.
And they're in very densely populated areas.
I am somewhat skeptical that, how do I read that? I think the politics is exactly as you said. I think the governor is trying to make utilization of both a development and an area where it makes sense. I'm not holding my breath for a second major commercial airport out there anytime soon.
And Kathy Willard, this comes as the state is looking at taking over Hartsfield-Jackson.
Well, they're always looking at that. And again, I'm not sure I
put in the original bill.
See that happen. And I don't think that that's a good idea. I think, you know, we keep adding layers of bureaucracy on layers of bureaucracy. And, I know people think that folks are serious about it, but I just don't see it happening. And certainly if we have a change in administration virtually anywhere in the Senate leadership or at the governor's level, we won't see that come out.
In some fairness to my friends, mm-hmm. those who are pro out there in Paulding County, you know, they put a lot of investment of time, certainly effort, money, and a variety of doing what they thought it was certainly best for Paulding, but also what the aviation industry wanted. And now, once so often is the case, be careful what you ask for. They found out, no, we really didn't want that. But there is use for that. There is a gem in that project. And whether it be a more mixed use, or whether it be a more, you know, civil aviation mm-hmm. with some limited regional transportation, there is a place in the transportation hub for that to work.
Kathy Wilder, you were talking about, when you said it wouldn't come out of the Senate, you were talking about the idea of a state takeover of Hartsfield-Jackson, right?
Yeah.
Do you think, though, that Governor Deal's move in Paulding County ends the debate over a second airport somewhere, anywhere?
Yeah, I think it does for now. I mean, I think, you know, Delta's the biggest employer in the state. They're very important to us.
And they have a little influence at the Capitol.
They have a little influence at the Capitol.
I found that out on my authority bills.
Paulding County is very, very close, you know, to the city of Atlanta. And, you know, there's a lot of air traffic coming in and out of, you know, Hartsfield, obviously, we're one of the biggest airports in the world. And, you know, how you sort of sort out and mingle that traffic in an airport this close, I just don't think it's, I don't think it'll pan out.
Speaking of development, very quickly, the Gulch. It's so complicated, the controversy over this now in the Atlanta City Council. That big area in downtown Atlanta, which is basically parking and empty space right now, there has been a lot of controversy over how to fund it, how much tax money in the form of tax breaks would go to the developer. The school system got into it with Mayor Bottoms over this. And now it's kind of pending. The school system appears to be happier with the new plan, but now the west side, where a lot of development has been going begging for years, is not too thrilled with the latest plan that's come up. Kathy Willard, obviously, with your experience in the city council, where does this go?
Well, you know, I think there'll be some sort of gulch deal. I don't know when there will be a gulch deal, and I don't know what it will be.
But not as fast as the mayor wanted, certainly.
Well, you know, not as fast as she wanted. And also, you know, my understanding is that the plan has been out there for a good long while. And so it really was a mismanagement of the politics of it, right? You know, you can't drop something that controversial and that complex on the city council and then expect.
Especially not if the school district's not behind it.
Especially not if the school district's not behind it. And so I think that's an issue. I think it's a race, some other issues, too. You know, we have a number of tax allocation districts that are getting ripe. We've also got a bunch that are underperforming. And I think it's time to look at the finances of all of them. We all know that Mayor Reed wasn't paying off the bonds for the Atlantic Station TAD. And so what are the implications of that on our budget in the future? So, you know, I think it's a real opportunity for the mayor to kind of step back and really look at the financial situation that she's been left with and try to understand, you know, what's going on there and then bring it back to the council.
But Chuck Clay, it's like the Jenga game. There are a lot of pieces that she's going to have to fit together without the whole thing falling down.
Enormous, and I wouldn't even begin to comment because this woman knows what she speaks on that issue. I hope when it's said and done, I just think the idea is so cool to have something really imaginative go in there. How creative could that be? You've got, at a certain point in time, though, unleashed sort of private enterprise, capitalism has got to drive the train, not necessarily in what the zoning is. That is up to the city council and others who might have impact. But don't make it so cumbersome, so convoluted that capital will not flow into whatever the dream is for hopefully a reality for the Gulch.
And we should point out here that WABE's broadcast license is held by the Atlanta Board of Education. Also on the subject of the future, and again, Kathy Willard, I'll start with you. The MARTA board passed the $2.7 billion transportation plan. The Beltline, which you have worked so closely with, has been a key part of the debate about this. Does the plan as it stands now have a chance of actually becoming reality with, again, so many actors, so many interests involved here?
Well, the overall,
particularly outside the city.
Well, the overall plan now that MARTA's got is, you know, this is just it's almost a hypothetical allocation of funds, because if you'll note in all of the discussions, you know, it's sort of, this is what we think, but, you know, it's a 40-year plan. Things change. People forget. Administrations are different. I think the issue now is to look at all of these routes and technologies that they're looking at and figuring out what does it really cost? Because I'll tell you, MARTA had some bad numbers and a bunch of the stuff that they had out there. And so now you got to really study it. You got to look at ridership and think about which routes can get federal funding. And so they've got some work to do.
Generally, if people look back, say, 30 years, we are slowly inching towards that sort of both necessity and need for an integrated system that runs metro-wide. It is important. I think two things. Number one, the growth of sort of this broader economic unit called Atlanta. But two, if Amazon has broken in, brought into focus, good, bad, I don't know where they'll wind up, of the need. If you're going to track the Amazon, you better have a metro-wide system of transportation that works.
Well, you know, people say metro-wide. Let me just say my personal opinion is, you know, with this MARTA money is it has to stay focused on the last mile in the city of Atlanta, because people won't use a metro-wide system, to get into the city of Atlanta if they can't get to that last mile, and not everybody can ride a scooter. That's all I got to say. That is not
I've been
the solution.
About it.
That's not the solution.
See me on one later this afternoon. And you're right. I really was addressing trying more of a larger block of an integrated system.
Absolutely.
where the two would interface. But clearly, MARTA money is legally going to be spent where it's required.
Right.
But the clock is ticking, and folks keep coming to this area. The issue of traffic, which has been the pressure on everyone to come up with something, is not going to go away.
It's not going to go away. That's why I think transit on the Beltline is a great idea, because we own the corridor, and it doesn't mix with traffic. And so let's just build that thing and start moving.
I think it makes for an exciting city and an exciting environment overall. Because these young folks moving in, they don't want to spend an hour and a half in the car every day or longer. They want to live in town, or they want to live in areas that are convenient, and they'd like transit when they want it and need it.
Very quickly to wrap up here, in the last few days, it's been disclosed by Ted Turner himself that he has a form of dementia. He's somebody, because he's been such a presence in Atlanta, it's been easy to take for granted. But this is a giant, not only in terms of this city and this region, but in terms of how the world got a lot of its information. And Kathy Willard, I don't know if you have any thoughts on his legacy or any personal encounters with him.
Well, he has a giant legacy here, you know. I mean, starting CNN, the legacy of Turner Broadcasting, what I'm most excited about of the things that he's done over time is his investment in environmental sustainability in the UN and nuclear disarmament. Those are things that people don't talk a lot about.
With former Georgia Senator Sam Nunn on that nuclear disarmament.
It's a billion-dollar commitment, and he paid it off. And so I think he's a hero in the world. And we talk about being an international city, and CNN was really the first kind of piece to the puzzle that validated that.
His legacy obviously speaks for itself. I would make it a very personal level. He would not know, remember, or even care. But back in the heyday of the early Braves, I was there when there was about 5,000 people in the Senate, in the stadium. He was wearing a Braves uniform as manager, if you recall, and you could have walked up and sat in the dugout. 10, 12, whatever years later, when in 1991, when I had another charity event and I was sitting down there, of all things, I'm going to have to hate to say it, but he and Jane Fonda shared a box with Chuck Clay, or not shared a box, was down on their row, and that stadium was jam-packed and jamming, and he deserves 100% credit for making that happen.
We're not in the Renaissance anymore, but he was a Renaissance man, still is. And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Joining us today, former Atlanta City Council President Kathy Willard and former state senator and former Republican state chair Chuck Clay, now with the law firm of Hall Booth Smith. Thanks to you both.
It's my pleasure. And Kathy, you're a major upgrade from my last opponent here.
And now we're going to start betting.
And Brian Robinson and Theron Johnson will be back for the next edition, and you're invited to be part of the live audience the evening of November 1st at Emory University. To find out more and to get your free tickets, go to wabe.org/community. And if you like this show, subscribe. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to rate us. That's a great way to make sure other people can find us. We'll be back in your feed and in your head soon with more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Local, state, national politics. WABE and NPR have the coverage you need. I'm Jim Burris, host of WABE's All Things Considered. Whether it's on the air at 90.1, streaming online, or connecting through our mobile app, WABE keeps you on top of election 2024 in what's sure to be a pivotal year in politics. And for candidates and ballot information, visit our election hub at wabe.org/election2024.